I'm Jim Brandt, and this session is Conversations with Fellow Travelers, and this is the last session. I'm going on the boat this afternoon, so last session for me. And the work we've been doing the last two sessions and today and this session are dealing with different cultural groups in North American society. And the basis, I'll put in one more plug for my friend Tex. The basis for the work that we've been doing has been this book, U.S. Lifestyles and Mainline Churches by Tex Sample, one of my colleagues in Kansas City. Let's see. How many of you were to one of the sessions where we talked either about the cultural left or the cultural right? Yeah. Okay, we had several of you been with us before. What Tex is trying to do in this book is trying to analyze, he's a sociologist, and so he's trying to analyze different cultures or different social groups in our society, in our country as a whole. And, I mean, he's really doing that as a theologian, as a seminary professor, as a church person, because he's convinced that if we're going to effectively reach people with the message of the gospel and get them to identify with the Christian community, we've got to understand where they're at. And the way they live and the way they see the world. And I mean, he would certainly claim biblical support for that kind of approach in terms of God meeting us where we're at in Jesus Christ and accepting us. Of course, we would hope going on then to transform us from there, but in the first place, coming to us rather than us having to ascend to God. And so... there's a real theological conviction underlying the work that he did and that we're trying to do together in terms of trying to understand where people are at so that we can speak to them in a way that they might be able to hear. As many of you know, what he tries to do in the book is lay out three dominant cultural groups in our country. And he talks about the cultural left, the cultural middle, the cultural right. And just one note that several of you have heard before. When he's talking about these groups, he's not talking about political left, middle, and right, but cultural left, middle, and right. And it's, people don't line up politically the same way they might line up. Now, some of you, we've talked about this, we worked through the left on Wednesday and worked on the right last evening. So, to get us started, I just want to ask some of you who have been to either of those sessions to help us give some definition of the cultural left and the cultural right, and then we'll focus on the middle this morning. So, what do you remember about cultural left or cultural right that we can get up here to get ourselves thinking?
Cultural right, family oriented.
Okay. Cultural right, family oriented. Uh-huh. So family's real important.
Local people.
Local people, yeah. Steve, what does that mean to you? That was one of the phrases we used. Local people.
Don't take transfers for jobs.
Okay. Okay.
People have generations in the same place.
Uh-huh. Usually generations in the same place. They're rooted to a place.
Small town.
Rural small town. Can be urban though too, but yeah.
Working class.
Working class here. Mm-hmm. And the folks who slipped from working class down to... Yeah, okay. What other things do you remember about
it? Traditional?
Pardon? Traditional values. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Traditional values.
for their children.
Okay. Okay.
Late gratification.
Mm-hmm. And some of them. Now, remember, there are different subgroups here. And we talked about
hardworking and
the respectables would be delayed gratification. The hard living people, I mean, those are the people who are drinking too much and maybe not holding their jobs and that sort of thing. That's, you don't have delayed gratification with the hard living. So there is some variation there. One of the traditional values, let's see, who said that? And what was, let's just say a little more about that. Do you remember any more about that?
The church-oriented.
Ethnic?
Bruce?
Yeah, you said something about ethnic, more ethnic identity.
Yeah, there can be. That's one. Uh-huh. It can be.
Can be bound to those traditions.
Yeah.
And they will change.
Yeah. Let's see. But do you remember the story about Tex and his mother dealing with Anita Bryant? And she didn't come out where he thought she would come out, right? So how does that fit with traditional values?
Loyalty and friends.
Yeah.
Family and
friends. Yeah. That there was that, I mean, traditional values is right, but you gotta be careful because the commitment to family and friends can override that. And so in the case of Tex, who comes from a cultural right family, he had this encounter with his mother where he was really, it just blew his mind that his mother, this was back in the early 70s when Anita Bryant was doing her campaign against gay and lesbian rights, and Tex's mother surprised him by speaking about Anita Bryant on the TV and saying, that hussy should shut her mouth. Tex didn't know what was going on there. And what was going on was his mother's best friend's brother was a gay man. And he was a man who had been teased and ridiculed and hurt much of his life. And she was tired of it. And so even though we'd say she was a person of traditional values, even more she was a person of family and friends, so that somebody who, to her mind, was picking on one of her friends, or one of her family, her extended family, that kind of altered what we might have expected from her in terms of her values. Okay. Anything else about the cultural right? All right. What about the cultural left? Yes, remember all the way back to Wednesday. So that's maybe that's.
They were the baby boomers, the younger generation.
Okay. Okay. Comes out of. So are all baby boomers cultural left?
No.
A lot of baby boomers. So those born between 1946 and 64 are baby boomers. Many of them are cultural. Many of us, baby boomer. How many of us here are baby boomers? Okay. And then we got some on either side, right? Some of you who are before the baby boomers and some who are after. How many are before?
Or just young adults.
Just young adults. And then how many do we have who come after the baby? Okay, see, we've got a good representative group. Okay, and part of it, see, those of you all who come after the baby boomers really haven't exactly figured in here yet, so, have to write another book if you talk about more groups. So what is the cultural left about?
Independent.
Okay, they're independent. Yeah, tell me some more about that.
Reacting against institutions that they don't feel working.
Okay. Independent. And there's a strong anti-institutional bent in them, isn't there? Yeah. Tell me some more about that. Why are they anti-institutional and what institutions are they?
Well, a lot of times stuff with like the government things okay. like Vietnam, where they feel like they've been lied to, or like marriage is another one where they've been failed marriages and really rebel against that and not being married or not going along with the government.
Good, so independence, anti-institutionalism, like against marriage and against the country.
They were committed.
Pardon?
They were committed to the causes that they were for.
Okay. Okay. Like what causes?
Well, they were.
What's
I guess for doing their own thing or for the.
That's a good slogan. I'm sorry?
They were for the people that didn't have, they tried to help other people.
Could be. Yeah. Some of them. Do you remember what we called the ethic operative here?
Self-fulfillment.
Ethic of self-fulfulfment, right?
No.
So do your
That's
own
right.
thing.
Gratification.
Uh-huh. And are we going to delay gratification for cultural left?
No,
not usually. Ethic of self. Where does this ethic of self-fulfillment come from?
High educational level.
Okay. High educational level. Yeah. And what are they reacting against?
The middle.
The demand. Delayed.
The middle and the delayed, yeah.
Self-denial of the parents.
Okay. We said that the parents of these folks, which is some of us in the room, the parents of these folks tend to operate out of an ethic of self-denial, and an ethic that is strongly institutional. We have to be committed to family and country and church and hanging in there. And the boomers' experience was often that you delayed self-fulfillment and you never got it. And so the boomers said, no, we're not going to wait. We're going to go for it now. And so in many ways reaction against the way they perceive their parents' generation. Yeah, you want to?
I was wondering, how do the baby boomers, how do they manage money? The reason I'm asking is because I know a lot of them and I can't believe their use of credit cards, the interest that stacks up, the things that they buy.
Perfect example.
And my father told me to buy a whole line credit for him as a car, and that was it. And I think that's a very good sound philosophy.
But that's perfectly a good illustration.
Would you describe them with being very adventurous with money and don't care about how in debt they become?
A lot of them, yeah. And it fits with that ethic of self-fulfillment and of immediate gratification. You know, we'll get it now and we'll mortgage the future for it.
And I don't believe it.
Yeah. Well, and that fits with, generation is a generation that believed in deferring gratification and saving.
But I mean, that in itself is gratification to me.
The feeling good about having managed your money well and saving.
Wise money management.
Okay.
I mean, you look at our country, I think that's one of our great problems.
It is. Okay.
But I think it seemed like it was somewhat forced upon them because of the fact that prices went up so high, and whether it be housing, whether it be paying for college, having student loans, whether it be for, and there were a lot of other things too that sort of got the boomer maybe.
Yeah, and the cultural left comes out of the affluence, the relative stability and affluence of the 1950s. And the baby boomers tended to take that affluence for granted and expect it. You know? And so then it's much easier to, if you come to take that for granted and expect it, you don't remember the Depression and World War II. And so it's easy to think, well, I can buy all this stuff and on credit and I'll be able to.
Well, I can understand how for education, you know, we all had to go into debt a little bit, and a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
I can understand.
But now your monthly
things,
visa bill,
it's
right?
The things, the material things.
Okay. Yeah, there's kind of. There's a real materialism at work here. Okay. One of the things that we didn't really get to, and I just want to mention briefly before we move on to the middle, is as text tries to talk about these groups, he tries to say, okay, what kind of theology are we going to see at work here? What's the theology going to be like here, and what's it going to be like over here? And what he says is that on the left, we have what he would call a journey theology. That is, you see, life is a journey. And what's the goal of the journey for the cultural left, baby boomers? What would the goal be?
Enjoy the journey.
Enjoy the journey, okay. That's, yeah. Is there anything they're trying to attain on this journey? Are they going somewhere? I think I heard it over here, Bruce or somebody.
Self-fulfillment.
Yeah, self-fulfillment. I mean, and they see that, we see that, they see that as something that we're trying to move toward. I mean, you never quite have it entirely, and so there's that journey motif. I mean, it's not just that baby boomers are, or cultural left baby boomers are just driven by immediate gratification all the time. There is a sort of, there is a spirituality at work here. They're sometimes characterized as believers without belonging. I mean, there is a spiritual hunger here and a desire to become a self. And the kind of theology that will speak to them is a journey theology, text says, that where we see life not in terms of things being settled, but in terms of being on the way. And as a church, we could find ways to encourage people to move along on their spiritual journey and move towards being a self before God. And text would say, if we look at the Christian tradition, where will we find resources for this? Well, we'll find it in, one of the places we'll find it is in the contemplative tradition, in the Christian tradition, where, and then that's obviously more and stronger in the Catholic tradition than it is in our Protestant tradition, but that sense of becoming a self before God and devoting one's life to, I mean, it's not going to be exactly the same, but there are going to be some contacts between a cultural left journey theology and the contemplative theology that we might find in some Roman Catholic thinkers.
But that's highly structured oftentimes. Institutionalized.
Yeah, it is. But you think about, so you're gonna end up changing it. Obviously, you're not gonna take a cultural left person isn't gonna take contemplative theology and go enter the monastery.
Yeah.
But think of the popularity of someone like Thomas Merton. I mean, part of that is that I think Merton is resonating with some of the spiritual desires of people over here. Okay, let's jump way over here and talk about what's the theology going to be like here. And again, what text will label it as, label this as a folk theology. Because what's central here is the people, the family, and the people of one's local place. So the emphasis is on the folk and on the story of the folk, the story of the people. These people on the cultural right tend to be very deeply grounded in Scripture. So the scriptural story is going to be a big piece of that, but not just the scriptural story. Local people are primarily, this is an oral culture as opposed to a literate culture. And so people in this culture tell stories. And they tell them. And that's part of the connection again with the Bible, because what's the Bible? The Bible's primarily stories. And so there's a real connection there. Last week, and as we get to the cultural middle, we'll see the cultural middle is going to be highly literate. It's going to be highly literate. And we Lutherans are the example of, you can't get through a Lutheran worship if you can't read. right? Even if you can read, if it's unfamiliar, you're going to be lost, right? Because we got this book and we got this bulletin and you've got to be able to go back and forth and figure out. Well, typically in the cultural life, that's not the kind of worship. It's going to be a worship where people are going to know the songs and the forms and the stories, but it's not going to be laid out in a book. People are just going to know it. Last week, I used a videotape called Sacred Stories. And featured in the videotape were three authors. One was Frederick Buechner, another was James Carroll, and the third was Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou is an African-American woman. And by far the most powerful of the three was Maya Angelou, because she got up there and she just talked and she just told the story and it just came naturally out of her. And Buechner and Carroll, they were good, but you know, they were more tied to reading their text and saying it. Well, part of that is the fact that African American culture is an oral culture, primarily. And so, again, telling stories is just part of the culture, and it's something that one grows up in. And my friend Tex is a great storyteller. Now, he comes from the cultural right. So, the theology appropriate here is kind of folk theology that tells stories, listens to the stories of the people, and is deeply grounded in Scripture. Okay. Any questions or comments? I mean, one of the reasons I like doing this is it helps me figure out where I have been. I mean, I'm a baby boomer and in some ways really deeply influenced by the cultural left, but I'm also personally, primarily cultural middle, emphasis on career. And actually, I think there's a little bit of this stuff in my own family background in terms of, you know, I grew up in the Missouri Synod, and the Missouri Synod was a real clannish, you know, you couldn't tell which was more important, being German or being Lutheran during the Missouri Synod. The story about when I was born and I was the first grandson on my mother's side, so my dad called his father-in-law and said, you know, I had this boy and his name is James Mark. And my grandfather said, well, Mark's okay, but I don't know about James. Where'd you get that? And at first I always thought, well, that's a theological thing, you know, the book of James being not highly regarded by my grandfather was a Lutheran pastor, I'm sorry I mentioned that. You know, so I thought it was a theological thing. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, it's also the case that James is the anglicized version of the name. It's not the, you know, the German version. So I'm not sure which it was that my grandfather was reacting against, the theology or the ethnicity. Anyway. Okay. But at least it's been helpful to me to try to think about my own family and what the different groups are. What I'd like to do now is read you a little piece that will get us introduced to the cultural middle. And think about these people and what you hear in their stories. Raised in an affluent middle-class attorney's family in Kansas City, Joe Bethea left the suburban home of his parents to attend the University of Missouri. His plans to enter law school were interrupted the summer after his sophomore year while he was working a temporary job in a small plant owned by a friend of his father. He got turned on to the idea of running his own company, changing his major to business administration and going on to do an MBA at Ohio State. He went to work as a mid-level executive in a production company in St. Louis. After 10 years and several promotions, he made the plunge and began his own business. now quite successful and in his 50s, he finds himself looking for more time with his spouse and his family, looking in his private life, for a chance to do some living that the pressure of business and career left undone. He is successful, but he sees the horizon of his business future. Now he thinks about some other fuller expression of himself and his family. Okay, now that's one figure, Joe. Put them on the board so you remember. I'm going to talk about Joe, and then we'll talk about Jane, the next one. Jane grew up in a family that eked out a living from a poor farm in Kentucky, so she grew up cultural right. Doing well in high school, she got a scholarship to the university. Later, with a master's degree in marketing, she started in an advertising company in Philadelphia and now holds a position in the upper end of a firm's management team. At 35, she's quite successful for her age and looks forward to a future with continued advancement in responsibility and earnings. Jane is never married, partly because she did not have time to develop a relationship requiring that kind of commitment, but mostly because she feels she never met a man who would make her career as important as his own. Her experience with dual career couples is that the woman continually sacrifices her work in behalf of her husband. She wishes she had a deeply committed mutual marriage and children, but she does not seem to have a place in her life for it right now. Okay. And Jim. Jim Dubbs grew up deeply impressed with the successful business and professional people he knew in his hometown. All his life, he wanted to be like them. His father had finished college and worked in a garment factory in middle management. When Jim finished high school, he decided to attend a local community college, figuring he could finish up at State. After completing his AA, he knew he wanted to go into sales and did not see any reason for further pursuit of education. Besides, he wanted to get going. Now at 30 years of age and working as a manufacturer's rep, he brings home a little over $20,000 a year, but he just cannot understand where all the money goes. Because he likes to dress nicely and feels it's good for business, and because of his love for sports cars, notably a red ZX300, he has not been able to buy a house. Instead, he lives in a two-bedroom apartment in a fashionable complex where all the upcoming young professionals live. Constantly in debt, Jim keeps hoping for a big break that will provide him with the access to the income and position for which he so vigorously strives. Divorced, he sees several women but does not contemplate marriage for a while. I can't afford it, and besides, I rather enjoy the single life. In spite of his upbeat personality, Jim hides no little resentment that life has not gone more his way. Even though he works for a large company, he does not trust the corporate world, and even less the government. Often with a customer, he finds himself sitting on his feelings to avoid an angry outburst that would spoil the deal. He wants success, but does not really have faith in the system that provides it. Okay. Those three are all examples of people that tax would classify as cultural middle. What kind of things did you hear there? Those three stories from the three of them.
Success-oriented.
Okay. Okay. Success and career oriented. That was that's clear for all three of them, isn't it? Okay. So let's see. Just put it all over the place. Okay, success and career oriented. Right. What else did you hear?
Lack of family.
Okay. Lack of family. How do you hear that, Bruce?
I didn't hear the first one, so I can't speak to that. But the other two either were had never married or had or had been married unsuccessfully and were going back into it.
Okay.
Jane thought she'd like it if the man came along who could work out, but she was putting her career ahead of her.
Didn't think she could find the right kind of person. Yeah.
Joe was looking for some kind of personal satisfaction that he didn't find too. So maybe even if it's not lack of family, it's like lack of a personal life outside of career.
Good.
They seemed unhappy in a way compared to the others, which were sort of like the left or something had their own little thing, source of happiness or something, and the right had their family resource. It seemed like the middle was a little bit, they seemed a little lost or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that is? Why are they lost? Why are they missing some things?
It seems like they're confusing something.
Family-oriented life.
The one was, Jane was.
They seem very materialistic and not have a spiritual side that they developed.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they're lacking a meaningful purpose, a direction in their life. Aside from their career, it's not really meeting that need.
Okay. It's not meeting the other. It's not meeting the personal and family.
Right.
Is it? Yeah. Tex would say, or I would say, that this is so demanding that even if you're making it, it takes so much of your time and energy that this gets at least overlooked. Mm-hmm. I mean, later we saw Joe, he's made it now, and now he wants to go back and try to work on this. But here, they haven't been able to.
I think they're all lonesome.
I think people need to.
And I talk about myself as a recovering graduate student. Which is funny, but it's not. I mean, the toll it takes to achieve the kind of success to get your doctorate, the toll it takes on family is pretty remarkable. And there's not, the academic or business world, they tend not to care very much about what it costs you to be successful, right? You want to be successful, this is what you're going to do.
And then when you get there, so-called get there, in the middle management, that's precisely where the jobs are going, disappearing in many, many areas. Mm-hmm. And they've worked so hard to get somewhere and now it's gone.
They're vulnerable to that kind of emergency because they got so much invested and that takes so much energy going.
Right.
Crisis.
And how can you give it up and,
What did you hear, what did Jim sound like?
Was he different from the others or?
Image-oriented.
Pardon?
Image-oriented.
Image-oriented. Okay. Okay.
Status image.
So he wanted the car and he wanted to live in the how is he different from the other two? Is he?
It seemed like he was only willing to invest a certain as much as he's driven, I'm only gonna do the minimal I can possibly do to get where I want to go. And where the others seem to have gone on this, well, they had a direction, and this is what it takes to do it. And they'd be willing to sacrifice or whatever to get there, but he hasn't.
So there was, Joe and Jane had attained a level of professional success that was eluding Jim. Wasn't quite getting there. And so he was not, spoke about the resentment then that he felt.
In a lot of ways, it almost sounded like some of the traits from the cultural left, just because he wants the fulfillment to the clothes and the car and where he's living, and is disillusioned with the government and the corporations. Whereas I didn't see that in the
picture. Yeah. And yet he's got much more commitment to a career than we would have over here, doesn't he? Because that is central for him.
Seems like a lot of the baby boomers tended to go towards us, like at the start of their, the rant and raving period, and then it turned into like they went right into the middle, where they were the career oriented, making the money and, you know, spending the cash and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that did happen.
Yeah, the young generation, but they usually make $100,000, not $30,000.
Right, right, but. And here's somebody who aspires. I mean, he's waiting for his big break, right? He wants to be a yuppie, but he doesn't quite know how to do it. Okay. One of the ways the text would talk about subgroups, subgroups in the cultural middle, you would identify. The successfuls, and that would be, Joe is an example of that, where they made it, at least professionally speaking, and they've got the career and they've done well, and there are some things that have had to be pushed aside to do that, but they've made it. Then he talks also about, and I'm not sure where Jane goes.
She's pretty young.
Yeah, she's 30.
She's 35. She's 35.
Okay, yeah, she was, wasn't she? Also talks about the strivers, and that's what you would call Jim. I mean, Jim's there, he's in the cultural middle, but he's not successful in the ways he wants to be. And he's working at it, but he's got, there are blocks there. He can't quite make it.
But it seems to me that Jim is, even though there might be blocks there, he's not really taking the initiative. He didn't get a higher education, or he had his associate's degree, but that's the minimum. And he's waiting for a break to come. He's not, or he's looking for a break, but he's not actually. Seems like he's not really
pursuing. Following through all the way. Yeah. I mean, so. Yeah, and then, what he says, the way text describes the strivers is that they're ambitious, they're ostentatious. I mean, there is that sense of trying to look like you've made it, even if you haven't quite. They're kind of macho and trying to show how good they're in debt. And often, underneath it, have a poor self-image that prevents them from getting where they want to be. So they're kind of stuck in sort of the lower rung. The other group, and I didn't read a story that gives an example of this, but also the third group was successful, the strivers, and then talks about the conflicted. In a way, maybe Jane is sort of there. Maybe she's a conflicted because she, on the one hand, she's successful, but on the other hand, she's aware that family and personal fulfillment that she wants, she can't find right now. And so she's not entirely happy. She's divided between, I mean, wanting this career, but also wanting family and personal stuff that's eluding her so far. Let's see. Let's just talk about now. What then? Let's shift over and ask how. How ought the church minister with and to folks like this? What's the role of the church for these cultural middle people?
I would say in the middle, if they're attracted to the church, that would be more attractive.
And often they are. I mean, this is a real heavenly church, especially we're talking about mainline churches.
They would be attracted to the so-called successful churches, probably. Mm-hmm.
Could be, yeah.
Or a church where they could enhance their image, perhaps, or
Networking.
Networking. Did that ever go on in your church? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mine. Okay.
What's networking?
Using your social contacts as able to further your career or further your lifestyle, whatever you need.
Help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What?
Using your contacts.
What should the church be about?
I would imagine they'd be really happy if the church would provide them with the personal aspect of their life.
Okay.
If they felt like people wanted to come up and be a part of their life when they attended this church, that would help fulfill that part that they might be missing.
Mm-hmm. But could they allow it to happen?
Why do
you? You know, sometimes even though you need it, you know, that those other drives are there so much that you really can't allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Say some more about it, please.
Well, I think people use people so much, and as if that's what they're doing within the context of the church, it doesn't take people too long to become aware that they're just being used, and they don't like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it can always happen.
So it is, it's sort of using the church to get personal satisfaction.
Or using the people within it.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain degree, we all allow people to do that and think nothing of it, or, well, that's all right, you know, and live with it. But after a while, it gets kind of old, too. They just get used all the time.
Yeah.
Seems the money issue is the big deal, you know, serving two masters, and what do you do with your money, and, you know, how do you get out of that trap of thinking that security is a, you know, good job or whatever, good career.
Yep.
Yeah. These people, the ministry idea is finding security in who you are without possessions and money.
Mm-hmm.
And God and the faith fulfillment of possessions. That's really lacking.
Yeah, or if people. Not possessions, at least that success in one's career. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, these people are all in their 30s, is that right?
No.
I mean the ones in the story.
Oh, no, I think Joe was in his 50s.
Because sometimes the stage you're in your life and the passage you're going through can have an effect on. You realize you need changes, and usually in the 30s and starting in the 40s, you start confronting some of the things that your life is missing or that you feel you need to redirect things.
The church to which we belong is very heavily middle, and it might be a little different because they're almost all academics, but still, we have so many people who are very ambitious, successful. We have, I think, 20-some ordained members in our parish. Poor pastor preaching from the and I think that to the extent that we're successful with our physical church, you know, our group of people, not the church with a capital C, provides for these people is like, there's a choir. People who have to be very good in what they do in their job can come to choir and be mediocre, but still have potlucks with the choir and have a kind of a fellowship once or twice a week with the choir that provides them an affective experience that they don't get through their work. Then there's the Bread Breakers program, which I guess is somewhat universal in the church, but what it offers in our place is somebody, an advanced graduate student on Sunday evening, instead of going right to the library, goes to Bread Breakers first. And so kind of, it enforces a fellowship with other people and a sharing which otherwise they wouldn't bother to take the time to do. And for a small parish, we have a tremendous number of committees. There are committees because all these people have all this leadership energy and ambition and everything, so we're very involved in many, many activities which
it's sort of like the chain dragging off the end of the truck, you know. There's all the static energy in our church, and they get to put it into Reach Out and Read, or the Gardening Committee, or Social Ministry Committee, or these different things for which they receive no rewards. It doesn't help their career at all, but it takes what they are, ambitious, hungry people, and lets them contribute it to their community. Uh-huh. And in a sense makes them feel good for being that kind of a person anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What Tex is a sociologist, and a sociologist, as he looks here and sees, analyzes this social or the cultural middle, what he's most struck by and most worried about is that what runs through this so strongly is individualism, in which the focus is really on individuals, certainly in a way that's very different from the cultural right. It's not to say that people, I mean, these people do want families, but clearly the focus is on success and career. And so there's the tension in this missing piece of family and affective and that kind of part of life. And this individualism leads often to a split between our public and our private realms. So that work is the public realm, where we go out and we do things with other people in order to advance our career and get along. And the private realm is the realm of family and of church and of the arts and leisure time. It's all private realm. From a theological point of view, that's something I would really worry about. I mean, this is certainly something that's happened in our society. We tend to think of religion as a private matter, very often. And we're kind of embarrassed. I mean, if you're functioning in the public realm, we don't tend to talk about our religious commitments very much. We tend to be, that's really not, in general, it's really not proper to talk about that, at least not with much enthusiasm. The problem with that, at least that I have, is that I think that really amounts to an accommodation of our faith to our culture, and a sort of way in which we take the passion out of the faith. And, you know, our faith is supposed to be about what's most important in our lives. And to sort of compartmentalize our lives and put faith off in one area is troubling, at least to me. What I'd like to do is try to develop that a little further. And real hard case here. Where's the page? This is one of Texas' stories. He had been in a congregation, and he was lecturing on the implications of the Christian faith for justice and social action. And when the session ended, a senior vice president of a local bank approached to raise sharp questions about the content of my speech. Mr. Sample, the biggest problem we have in the church today are people like you pushing the church to engage in controversial issues. If clergy and seminary professors like yourself would stop pressing these things and go back to preaching personal salvation, notice, personal salvation. Salvation is a personal, private matter. If you would do that, The church would be better off and we laity could go into the world and make the application of our beliefs and moral teaching. Leave it to the individual. So Tex says, do you do this in your bank? Of course. Let me ask you, as a Christian, do you believe that you have a special responsibility to the poor? Yes, I do. I believe I need to help them every way I can. It's my Christian responsibility. As a Christian, are you for progressive taxes that help the poor or regressive taxes that favor the rich? As a Christian, I'm for progressive taxes. Here we go. Then, will you go to the bank tomorrow and order your lobbyist in Jefferson City, which is the capital of Missouri, to work for progressive tax legislation? That's silly. You know perfectly well I can't do that. I have to represent the interests of our depositors and investors. Why, if I did that, I wouldn't be able to keep my job. They'd have a new person in within a week. And Tex says, he was, of course, correct that he could not do what I suggested. Yet, his point illustrates why the mission of the church cannot be adequately filled by leaving it only to the efforts of individuals. This is especially true in the case of the cultural middle, where people are caught in the cross pressures of positions of privilege. I think one of the problems here in this cultural middle is that we are successful, and part of our success leads to this public and private split in which it's really hard for us to live out the implications of the faith in our professions. I mean, for good reasons. You recognize that if the banker did that in the drastic way that Tex asked him to do it, he would. He'd be out of his job. So what does the church need to do? Well, it seems to me that what needs to happen here is we need to see that it's not just, we're not just talking about personal issues and personal problems here, but the problems that Joe and Jane and Jim were facing were not just individual problems, but they were social problems. Problems of the way that we have structured our society in terms of focusing so much on success and especially in terms of money in ways that that really cause a pain for everybody, including those who appear to be the successful ones. Because they're the ones who, in terms of profession, in terms of money, they've made it. But there's a great price paid there. And it's real hard for us to see because we tend to be, we're all, I think, so influenced by American individualism that we look at problems and we tend to see them as personal, individual problems. And we don't tend to see that there's a way that we structure our world, and some of the problems are built into the structures. And when we do this split, you see, then we can't address the issues. We can't address the systemic issues because we're saying, religion's a private matter, and it really doesn't have to do with analyzing the way our society is structured and what's going on there. So that what you see, the outcome here, the text would argue, is that we need to make the church a place where we can look at these, not just individual issues, don't make it a private matter, but we need for the church to be a place where we can look at what's going on in our society. And what does our faith have to say about what's going on in our society? And how can we, as Christian communities, move beyond the church being a place where we network and where we're sort of
respectable to be in a place where we can really struggle with the hard social issues and what our faithfulness is.
Yeah. Every community has a certain number of church hoppers, mm-hmm. you know, somewhat like grasshoppers, but mm-hmm. would they tend to fit more into the middle?
Mm. I don't know. Why? What makes you think
they might? If a congregation tended to deal more with social issues, mm-hmm. as the pastor switches, you know, mm-hmm. and back and forth kind of thing, I would think you could see membership shift with that, mm-hmm. unless they're extremely tolerant people.
Because the pastor's changing, so the people.
Yeah, and if the issue becomes personal faith and personal commitment and mm-hmm. things like that on the one hand, and then the next one comes along and talks
right.
social justice
right.
issues,
right.
and then the next one right. comes along and flip-flops again. And I'm not sure that the so-called pastoral church evaluations or self-studies and things like that really get at all that.
Yeah, and I don't think, he's not suggesting that we just become activists. I mean, part of it is that we do need that sense of belonging to a community, and that's part of this, what's missing here in this individualism. I mean, what are we good at in the middle, you know, in the church in the middle? We're good at activities. Man, we go and we do
right.
stuff. And we're good at study, aren't we? Oh, let's get a group together and we'll study the problem of world hunger. Well, that's okay. But it doesn't get us to that next step of then what can we do about world hunger? And how can we become a community in which we really belong to each other in important ways and find acceptance and belonging and meaning that's independent of whether we're successful or not. You know, I mean, I think that's part of what the church is called to, and it's something that's real hard for us in the middle to do. But I'd like to hear what other comments or questions you may have about
it. I find we always stop short of making each other feel uncomfortable. I feel like the church doesn't want to make people feel uncomfortable, and that's where we... You know, we just, that's what you're saying. We can talk about, but we don't say, what am I, what are you? You know, we don't point at ourselves and say, I'm part of this problem. That's, you know, my lifestyle is contributing to this problem. You know, I always feel like we get just that close, and then when you start pointing and, you know, let's really look. No, pastors don't want to do that. We don't want to offend people. We don't want to, you know, and then we're just sort of, and we never get beyond that. Uh-huh. I don't know, you know, I get real frustrated
yeah.
with that.
And why do you think that is? I mean, I think that's true often.
I don't
why
know.
Do
I guess, well, I know part of it is they don't want to alienate.
Right.
You know, we don't want to alienate. But,
Right. If I get up there and preach a prophetic sermon and
yeah.
point the finger there, but are they going to put their money in the plate
yeah.
so they can pay my salary? I mean,
the church's job isn't just to deal with this world either. I mean, there's another focus there altogether of worship and of the kingdom to come and not just focusing on all the, and making everyone feel a little guilty about this world now.
Okay.
But there are local things that people can join in as a church, and those that want to join in can. In our church, those that want to contribute food to a local shelter,
mm-hmm.
provide all night
mm-hmm.
attendance
mm-hmm.
at the shelter, so they have somebody there, things like that.
Yeah,
provide
and I think
food to the women's shelter once a month at dinner. Consistently, that's nothing that's going to be controversial, and yet
right.
it's really needed.
I
those that don't want to help don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
It seems interesting that these people are like needy and need to be fed too. You know, it's like just recently I've heard of a number of churches having
you know, care groups, different kinds of groups, and it's not about like a Bible study or something. It's interesting how they've become real popular and how these people like need that family, that the right, you know, they need that with their missing.